As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Hey folks, welcome into On to Waveland. It's the Cubs podcast here at The Athletic. I am Brett Taylor, joined by Sahadev Sharma and Patrick Mooney. We got to get into the Cubs series five-gamer. First, feels like their first five-game series in a while against the Cardinals this weekend. And, you know, it's funny. I'm going to mention it right at the top that going into the series, so I can't place it exactly, and I didn't look it up, but there was this five-game series against the Cardinals at Wrigley Field, maybe early 2000s. It might have even been...
I think it was 03.
I think it was the 2000... Was it the
03
season?
About the five-game set where they won 4 of 5 and they almost won five. Like Orlando Palmeiro hit one off the vines and won the... Yes. That's how the Cardinals won the only game. Yeah.
Yes. Okay, so it was 03. I knew it was back then. I couldn't remember if it was that season, but... So... I came into this series not thinking, because I'm not a crazy person, that the Cubs were going to, you know, take 4 of 5 and it was going to like transform their fortunes and it was going to be like, whoa, they're actually competing this year. That's wild. And they were going to make that run that the 2003 team did. But I did think about it like that series insofar as I just remember watching that series and feeling good. You know, it was like the beating the Cardinals at Wrigley Field in a five-game series. It just feels enjoyable to experience this. And like we talked about last week on the pod, you know, this is a season where you're always looking for those opportunities to just enjoy baseball, enjoy something. And so because they'd had a couple wins coming into this series, because, again, it was at Wrigley Field, there were some ancillary storylines that we'll get into that kind of made things even more joyful. I just kind of let myself be like, you know, but if they do win 4 of 5 or if, you know, the earth cracks open and the apocalypse begins and they win all 5, I'm just going to feel really happy about that. And so to that end, when they lost the nightcap of the doubleheader on Saturday, I think I was a little more down than I thought I was going to be, because I was like, damn it, now they can't win, you know, 4 or 5, and it can't be this really fun, great thing. And then, of course, they lose last night similarly in extra innings. And, you know, we can talk about how close the games were in the series, but at the end of the day, it's another series loss in a year that we expect lots of them. So that is my long-winded introductory way of saying some of my joyful anticipation for this series was, you know, got sucked out in those last two games.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think we talked about this last week, and, you know, they're not an awful team. As I don't think they're as bad as their record indicates, but it's also just in these types of losses, the ones that they suffered this weekend, particularly the last two, are just like, well, they're also just not good enough. They're missing certain pieces that kind of get you over the hump, or have certain players playing that it's like, yeah, that guy's going to cost you in certain situations. You don't want that guy up in that situation. And,
I'm not going to name names at this moment, but like, you could be, you could be talking about three or four.
No, that's why there's no need to name names. who knows who I'm talking about?
Oh, shit, he's coming up. Yeah.
And you know, something that as far as you could see, David Ross was like a little bit pleased in one sense. It's like he could see it coming. He's like, I see these guys. There's some players here that we have something going. You know, he's not delusional in thinking this team. I'm sure he's going to be positive and want to turn this around in 2022, but he's not to the point where it's like all is well and we're going to figure this out this year. But he's seeing things that he likes, but he's also just not willing to give excuses. And I'm not sure if it was you or Brett or Michael, Brett, and I think it was a fair point that you made about Michael Rucker on Saturday night, right? That was you, Brett. I think it was a perfectly fair point that you made, that Rucker's been okay. He's been a pretty decent reliever. He had to warm up multiple times that game, came out. Who knows how much he'd warmed up, how ready he was for that situation, and he was terrible. Ross was not willing to give him that excuse. Nope, he hesitated. He didn't throw him under the bus, but you could kind of tell what his point was, like, this is the big leagues. If you're not ready to go, if you can't do it, I may need you in the fourth, and I may have to get you warmed up then and may not go to you. Oh, well, you better be ready when I call you next time. This is the big leagues. This is how it works. No excuses. That's not what he said, but that's how I took it, because he was not willing to give him the excuse. And I kind of like that. It doesn't matter whether this is a lost season or not. He's looking for who can help him when they are a winning club. And I think that's kind of what we need to look to over the next few months. And I totally get where you were coming from and think it was fair, but
Well, and I would just say to that, Rucker would probably say the same thing.
Yeah,
I'm sure he would. But also, your point is correct and well taken. This is my interjection. See, I'm derailing your point. It is also convenient that reaction from Ross is a little bit self-preservation-y, right? Because if it's, sure, hey, it's the big leagues, everybody's got to be ready, well, then it's not Ross's fault for getting him. What was the expression that Madden used to use?
Dry
Wait,
hump?
No, don't move on. We got to dry hump. Yeah. And I'm
How
not like, I'm not
that?
Blaming Ross. Yeah, I can't forget that. Sorry. And I'm not even blaming Ross in that moment for like getting Rucker up when he did, because it was sensible in that moment. It was more of just for me, it was frustration in seeing people jump all over Rucker.
I get what you're saying.
When it's like, man, come on, he did have a pretty tough situation that game.
And also, I mean, if you want to give Ross an excuse, what's he supposed to do? Go to his best relievers every single time during this stretch when right, there's no days off and right, there's multiple doubleheaders? So it's kind of difficult for everyone, but it's also, I appreciate Ross not leaning on any excuses. He didn't say, well, you know, these guys have been overworked. He didn't say anything. He just said, got to do your job. It's part of it. And I appreciate that.
I think if you take this stretch, it was, what, 11 games in 9 days. The Cubs won 5 and lost 3 in extra innings. And that's better than I thought they would do, to be honest. Like, it wasn't maybe the disaster it could have been. They were largely competitive games. I think this is kind of broken record territory. It just underlines again, like, the Cubs don't have that no doubt number one starter. And you win that series, Brett, that you were kind of like talking about, dreaming about, is a guy like Marcus Stroman just shutting down the Cardinals after getting an early lead. And the Cubs really don't know what to expect from like anyone in the rotation on a game to game basis at this point. And the offense comes down to, you know, kind of just getting that big hit. And like, this is kind of what happens when you throw together your lineup with a lot of like kind of lottery tickets or bounce back guys or triple A guys getting their first chance. Like, you know, I think, you know, the Cubs don't have that starter who's going to go into Camden Yards this week and just like shut them down and give them an easy win, rest the bullpen, kind of set things up for the next day. And, you know, I think kind of managing series is an idea we've talked about or we've heard about, whether it's like Dave Roberts in LA or what Gabe Kapler was trying to do with the Giants. Like, all these games are interconnected, and it feels like the Cubs are kind of starting from scratch each day. There's not like too many things they can like absolutely count on, and that makes it really hard to pile up series wins.
What a great point. I hadn't, you know, that's a thing that we all know, but we don't think about, is the fact that, like, as you're saying that, I'm thinking back, I'm like, yeah, man, I have not thought about the structure of a series or the games that will follow and how what's happening today is going to impact tomorrow and the days on. I haven't thought about that at all this year and in forever. And it's not because the games don't matter. It's because the Cubs have not ever had an opportunity to even think that way. It's just everything's hair on fire mode. And this series against the Cardinals underscored that. You know, it was sort of good enough to be in the game. So let's just try to win it, figure out tomorrow. And yeah, that's a great point. That'll be something to continue to think about this year, especially as, again, you never want to be the guy who's saying that the wins and losses don't matter, especially in early June. But as we go on, they are going to become less and less an indicator of a successful season from here on out. If you lose more than you win, it is not a successful season. And I'm not suggesting otherwise. It's just when you start to accept your reality, then you're like, okay, well, knowing that the wins aren't coming, what does mark success from here? And I think a huge, huge part of that is going to be a group, discerning from a group of young pitching that the Cubs have who can be counted on coming out of the gate in 2023, because that's going to dictate what the Cubs feel they need to do this offseason, where resources are going to be allocated, and how competitive they believe they can be next year. And so there's two components to that. One is just figuring out who can be counted on, but also it's who can continue to develop this year and get themselves into a position where you trust them for next year. And to that end, this series was, I thought, as encouraging as any series in the last X number of years, because you had not one, not two, not three, but four young starting pitchers making very competent appearances in this series. And that, like, I rack my brain to think about the last time that you could say that. Now we can't call them entirely homegrown because Caleb Killian was an acquisition, but effectively, I mean, when you develop a player and he comes up, I consider that homegrown. And so you're talking about, when was the last time the Cubs had four pitchers come up through their system and contribute? And it's like, maybe it was that 2003 team. Yeah. Maybe it was that, you know, I mean, like, really. And so to that end, I know that we won't, you know, Killian was optioned back to Iowa. He'll be back. We know he'll be back. We know that this is part of his development process. And we know that with Matt Swarmer, it still remains hard for me to imagine a starting pitcher there with two pitches. It's just so rare that you can make it work with just two pitches. And we can talk about why it might with him. And Keegan Thompson, maybe he ends up back in the bullpen. Maybe we find out that's just what it is. And with Justin Steele, maybe he's a little too erratic to be a consistent starting pitcher, because he'll go from great outings to tough ones. But the fact we can even have this conversation today, how can you not be encouraged about longer term thinking? Because starting pitching was the thing that the Cubs couldn't do. And now they have four out of five games in a series against the Cardinals getting young starting pitchers throwing good games.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's certainly a positive. It's something they need to build off of and you want to see continue to happen. I don't know exactly what these guys are. Swarmer in particular is really interesting. When you deliver back-to-back quality starts like that and you just are really making hitters struggle to figure out what you're throwing there and you only have two pitches, it's fascinating. And there have been guys that have succeeded. They're few and far between, but there are pitchers who have done that and had careers with basically throwing two pitches. But it's just really hard to see it, you know, lasting for a while. So I'm really curious to see. He's going to have to start against the Yankees, right? Yeah. So
yes.
So that's a hell of a test right there. Throw him in Yankee Stadium, two pitch guy. I mean, it's a great slider, right? It's a unique slider. It's not your prototypical horizontal break slider. It's a weird pitch that tunnels really well with his fastball. He seems to know how to use it and throw it in slightly different ways. So he's intriguing, that's for sure. I think what's interesting is, and I think this will happen over the course pretty much of the next 4 months for us, but we're going to vacillate about what does this team need exactly going into, like, well, this is their biggest weakness. I mean, because the offense looked lost not long ago, and suddenly the offense looks a little bit better. And it's like, well, are there pieces emerging? And what, 2 weeks ago, nobody would have said, well, Chris Morrell is someone that you want to keep around, and you can say that this is a guy that, you know, he's a piece for the future.
I mean, he's a guy who deserves a statue. Like, he's like the next Cupcake statue. Yeah. Within 2 weeks.
And now it's like, if he doesn't reach base, you know, fans are like, what is happening? So this season is going to be like that. I think we're going to have to adjust as to what do they need to do this winter? Well, that's why we need to let this season play out to really understand where this rebuild stands, where, how far behind they are, how much ground they need to make up, and how they exactly need to do that.
I also think it'd be foolish to get too wrapped up from, you know, the Cubs' perspective of like, well, these are our homegrown guys. And like, you know, if we look up at the end of the year and like Justin Steele's ERA is like close to 5 and like he's shown great flashes, and like Keegan Thompson kind of tires in the second half because he hasn't really like pushed himself to this level, and Swarmer kind of gets figured out. And I mean, I think Killian's probably the guy they'll get a really long wrong way, and just in terms of how they talk about him. And, you know, he's certainly performed, you know, at every level. But I would just like to see the Cubs get a little more creative, whether it's like using those guys in different roles out of the bullpen, maybe like trading one of those guys. Like if there's this kind of like clump of kind of swingmen of getting a different piece. And I just think they're still going to have to invest big time in this rotation. Like if you want to be serious about contending next year, I think Brett, you've said like a team that on paper doesn't need like 100 things to go right to have like a viable, entertaining summer. Like it starts with the rotation, and you know, it would really help if those guys could all come out of the bullpen or make spot starts, or you have a lot of depth. I just don't see how, once again, starting pitching is their number one priority. And I guess we'll see what Jed does at the trade deadline. Like, is it just Smiley and Miley being traded, and that's your kind of 40% gone? Or I guess Kyle Hendricks is pitching so poorly right now that it's hard to see like getting anywhere close to maximum value for him. But if Stroman is moved, like there's a lot of pieces that'll probably tell us like where they're thinking for next year. But to me, it's all about the pitching. Like you gotta invest in some, like, you know, a number one starter and like a number three type starter if you want to kind of like build this thing out to where there's not an enormous amount of pressure on, you know, guys who took a long time to get there and are going to take a long time to figure out how to stick too.
Yeah, we've talked about that a lot, that the, not even the best teams, but just like the competitive teams, they tend to have, and this is true on the positional side as well, they tend to have more guys than you can know what to do with. And it sorts itself out. And the best organizations sort of have a plan, like, okay, if everybody's healthy and effective, we can kind of say, sorry, a couple of you are going to need to keep going at AAA, a couple of you are going to have to play off the bench or out of the bullpen, we'll figure it out. And then when the things happen inevitably in a season, whether it's an injury and you require an immediate replacement, or it's underperformance and you wish you could pull the trigger on a move quicker, but you can't because you don't have that superior depth that good organizations do, we see that just consistently, the best teams. And what we haven't seen from the Cubs for the last, you know, during this, the Epstein-Hoyer era, really, is having those reserves of extremely high quality arms at the upper levels of the minors, where when your plans for your big league rotation or your big league bullpen go awry, you can just backfill. And it's like, wow, that really didn't drop off much at all. Well, I think the Cubs have that now. I think they maybe have it on starting pitching depth and bullpen depth. What they don't have is the guys in front of that, in the rotation at least, yeah. like what Mooney is saying, where it's like, well, but, you know, we've got our Max Scherzer or Jacob deGrom, and if they get hurt, we can, you know, backfill with the guys if we have to. But, like, they're supposed to be the guys that are fronting this thing. And while I loved and still love the Marcus Stroman signing, and I hope very much that they do not trade him because I think he can be in a very important part of the 2023 rotation, you know, he wasn't that guy. I don't think anybody thought he was like, oh, he's coming over to be like the, like you said, Mooney, the guy who, when he's starting and you're kind of in a rough stretch, it's like, oh, well, thank God he's starting because that's going to end this bad stretch. Cubs haven't had that guy for a while. And so I do look forward to this offseason in that regard and reminding people that even as the Cubs, you know, even if it looks like they have a glut of young starting pitching, it's like, no, you still have to add the guys in the front to make it work and to be competitive.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if that guy's available this winter outside.
It's Rodon.
That is, oh.
He can opt out.
That's a big risk for a team that may not be in the market for big risks. I'd be surprised if that guy is available, but they certainly should they certainly have to and likely will add like depth in the sense like a Stroman type piece, right? They certainly have to do that. I don't know if this is the offseason where they start trading for guys, but
you trade for Glass now.
Yeah, I mean
that's the other
one. You could do something like that. There are options and paths available, and we've talked about this. I truly believe that to a more competent and on paper competitive team for 2023. There's just so much going on with how they build a long-term team, how they view that as sustainable. I don't think like going all out for someone like Rodon or DeGrom, who will likely have many more suitors than the Cubs are willing to battle with at this point in their contention cycle. So I agree with what you guys are saying. I just don't see who that guy is. Quickly glancing at free agents, not the shutdown guy. I mean, there are guys that you could say, yeah, that guy helps. That guy's a two or a three, right? Like what you'd say for Stroman, but that's not the no doubt guy that Yu Darvish was in 2020 or the second half of 2019, right? And I guess those guys are just rarer to find, and they are the guys. I mean, John Lester, I guess, wasn't always that guy, and I'm not sure if you'd describe him that way when the Cubs signed him, but at times he was that guy, right? So you can get guys like that. So maybe Stroman can be that guy for periods of times and stretches and maybe a full season, but you don't really look at him as that guy traditionally, if that makes sense. Because Kyle Hendricks has been that guy where the manager says, well, I'm glad Kyle Hendricks is starting today because that's going to be a win for us. But he's certainly not that guy right now. So I think realistically what they're going to add is someone like that can be that guy but isn't looked at as that guy for years on end, right? And those guys are just, there's five of them, eight of them, 10 maybe.
Yeah, I mean, maybe not that level, but I mean, I'm looking at the list too. Like, if the Cubs have enormous financial flexibility, they love talking about their pitching infrastructure and how great it is. Right. I mean, I don't know, is Chris Bassett like a Lance Lynn type of guy? Like, not an ace, but like a really strong kind of reliable guy towards the top of your rotation. I don't know. This is kind of in the Rodon bucket too, of like Noah Syndergaard. Do you trust him to stay healthy over the course of a big deal? Verlander's got a player option that would be entertaining. Oh, Sean Manaea has been a really good pitcher for a long time, and he was like coming out of the draft. I remember the Cubs, I think, like looked at him for that draft pick where they selected Chris Bryant. Like, that's how good he was going into his junior year, and then he got hurt or whatever. But
even Jameson Taillon.
He's on there too.
You mentioned a few guys that I think
like interesting
make sense.
Types. Yeah.
Yeah, they're certainly, I totally agree with you. They have to add. And like, I think all those guys that you mentioned were guys that I, when I was going through that list quickly, is like, yeah, they all make sense. It's just, it's so hard to, I don't know what it means anymore to find it, like to go and buy that ace on the open market unless you're willing to go above and beyond to get Jacob DeGrom, which I just don't believe they are. I just don't believe they're going to do that. Maybe, you know, in a few years, they'll be willing to do that. But I really believe where this team is and what this team is, I hope I see this going forward because I think it's what makes the most sense. It doesn't have to be every year where you are the biggest spender, but you need every winter you should be spending. There, you don't take winters off because that's how you end up what we saw before, right? Where, well, this team is good enough, we don't need to add any pieces. No, stack free agents upon free agents and like you stack prospects upon prospects. It's the same thought process in a sense, because if you do it properly, you won't have too many big contracts all at once because they'll be coming off the books at different times. You'll be able to fill holes properly in multiple fashions. It won't just be through the system, and you're not just relying on free agency. And then you also have the ability to fill holes during the winter, and if you're competitive, fill holes during the summer at the trade deadline. This is how you do it. That's how you build a team. There's not just one path. So I totally agree that all those names you mentioned should be on their list of, is this guy someone that we give a contract to? And Bassett, I think, makes a ton of sense in the sense that he's probably not going to get like 6-7 years. He's 35. You know, so if he wants a 3-year deal, if he's willing to do that, a 3 or even 4-year deal, that's kind of right up Jed's alley if they believe he ages well. Those types of deals make total sense. Once you start talking about under 5 years, Jed should be pouncing on talented guys like that.
Because, Sade, we were talking about this in the dugout at Wrigley the other day of like kind of this idea of the Stroman Suzuki signings, kind of like layering those over multiple off seasons.
And you avoid, you know, there was a cliff because all these guys came up at the same time, right? Well, there can also be a cliff if all your free agents are lined up similarly and you know, you're calling up all your prospects at once. Like, you don't want that. You want to stagger everything. You want everything to, like, and you fill holes as you go along in different ways. Well, we got this guy. Well, we have Chris Morel playing center field right now. Well, Pete Crow Armstrong's ready to come up in 2024. Okay, shift Morel to left because Ian Happ's no longer here. Whatever. I'm thinking off the top of my head, throwing stuff out, right? And that's how you do it, right? You don't stress about, well, no, well, how do you fill the Ian Happ gap? Well, you're just talking about trading Wilson Contreras, and then Ian Happ leaves too. Now you have nothing. No, you don't have nothing because you keep producing talent and you keep adding talent. That's how it should be.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's
the
little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms and restrictions apply.
Well, and another factor to consider about that, the layering of significant signings, which, as you rightly noted, the Cubs didn't, this isn't an apology for them, but it didn't really have the opportunity to do that sort of in an optimal way because the whole core was on the exact same track because when they came up, and so they couldn't quite stagger the moves maybe like they would have wanted to. But part of the reason that you do that as well is so that when there are busts in free agency, which there will be inevitably, you don't have two or three of them on the exact same contract at the exact same time, and you're like, the huge chunks of money are eaten up and dead money at the same time for the same number of years. You would want those also to be rolling off at different times And I guess my parting thought on this discussion, which this I think is where we're going to wrap things, is maybe Jacob DeGrom is not a tier that the Cubs will play in. Maybe. But here's something to remember. You made the point yourself, Sahadev, that how many of those guys are there in baseball? I mean, he's the one, but like set that aside, 6 to 8 total in baseball that are like those truly elite top starters. And how often do they become available at all? Not very. And so what I would hope is at least a consideration, because I agree with you. I think this Cubs front office is going to be extraordinarily averse to very long-term contracts. I think we're going to find over time that that's going to be a hallmark of this group. But what I am not convinced is that that means that they will not be interested in some very pricey free agents. And I think they would look at, for example, the Max Scherzer deal with the Mets, where it was an extraordinarily large AAV, but only 3 years. I'm not saying they would sign that exact same deal. Maybe they would for DeGrom. I mean, every team should.
Yeah.
I don't care. It's worth the risk for him. But I think you kind of look at that and you think, well, maybe he's not going to find a 5+ year deal. He's 35, coming off a whole lost year to multiple different injuries. He might not find that deal out there. He might have to do the super crazy high AAV 3 or 4 year deal. And I'll plant my flag now. If the Cubs aren't in those conversations, even this offseason, I'm going to be pretty pissed. And I think a lot of that will depend on what happens over the next 4 months, because I think this was baked into the entire conversation we're having today. A lot can look different between now and September with this organization, with this team. There's still just a ton of information to be sorted out. And it's going to depend on the trade deadline. It's going to depend on prospect development. It's going to depend on these pitchers coming up and continuing to develop, like we're talking about.
And I just want to reiterate what you're saying. It's why when fans scream and yell, like, how can you even say that they have any chance of competing in 2023 if they trade, players at the deadline again? It's like, because, like, I didn't know 2 weeks ago that Christopher Morel was a quality major league player. I didn't know that. And now he looks like he could be. But in the next 4 months, I may learn that he's not, right? So just let it play out to a certain degree. I agree that there's a lot of things to be frustrated about as a fan, but you also can't dismiss all these young players or any of these guys just yet. Like, it's been 2 months of baseball. So let's see what happens and who they can actually keep and build around and use for the future, whether that's as a piece off the bench, a usable piece on a winning team, or a core player, whatever the heck that means anymore.
They can't see your air quotes. I'll put that in audio form.
Thank you.
He did a very aggressive into the screen. Core players.
Whatever that even means.
I am not a crook. Core player. Whatever the hell that is. All right. Good. This is a good wrapping spot there. We thank you folks, as always, for listening to On to Waveland. It's the Cubs podcast here at The Athletic. You can get it wherever you get your podcasts, wherever you're listening right now. Maybe you do a little subscribe button situation, and then you will never miss any of our ebullient conversations about the future of the Cubs. That is Sahadev Sharma and Patrick Mooney. They write at The Athletic. Read their stuff. I am Brett Taylor. I write at Bleacher Nation. Read mine as well. And we will be back at you later this week. Take care, everyone.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.